not the recap that you're probably looking for. It's a Tyler Kluver solo episode today. You're going to hear why I'm doing this by myself early on a Sunday morning. I still think that I break down the game decent, but more of the recap, more thoughts from both Kevin and I, potentially Drake. Who knows? They scored 27 coming Thursday. But for now, sit back, relax. Let's have a day. Welcome in, everybody, to episode 352 of the Washed Up Walk-Ons. Today, an interesting episode. I am standing here at 7:51, standing, yes, recording this at my standing desk at 7:51 a.m. on Sunday morning, running on about 12 ounces of water because I don't drink coffee, and the Iowa-Nevada game finished up just about 6 hours ago, somewhere around 1:30 to 2 a.m. in the morning. You're not going to hear Kevin or Drake's voice on this. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know if 27 points out of Iowa is enough to get Drake out of retirement for the week, out of his podcast purgatory, to bring him back for a Thursday episode. We're going to have to find out. That will be a mystery to all of us as we climb through this week, but I'm going to be alone today. Let's start with that, and then we'll get into the craziness of last night. Prefacing this, if you're here for the ultimate 100% breakdown, that is probably going to happen on Thursday's episode, along with the preview of the Rutgers game. Here's why. I had not anything close to me, but I am on my way to a funeral later today on Sunday. Actually, a visitation today, funeral tomorrow. So the options were of our Sunday recording time were we have to record in the morning or we have to record on Monday night. And tomorrow night really doesn't work for me either. It's going to be a long, long day. And once we get into tomorrow, then we start getting into the Tuesday Patreon-only podcast, the Tuesday live show, Wednesday we record. So I figured I'm just going to get an episode out now. Anybody who decides they don't want to listen to Tyler Kluver do his best impression of John Miller, I am not John Miller. Right, I wouldn't want to listen to me. Maybe that's not a good way of branding and representing myself here. But you're already here, or you're not. Right, you've already turned it off, or you haven't. So, I'm gonna give my thoughts, and I'm just some guy, right? The reason Kevin is not here is because he is probably still intoxicated from last night. He's at a bachelor party in Arizona. Drake is also in Arizona. He lives in Arizona, and Drake took home a first place championship in some jiu-jitsu tournament where that was called High Rollers, and it was cops versus stoners. I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine here. These are the two guys that I decided to create a show with. So both of them probably went to bed around the time the game got over last night. And so neither were available for this morning. I went to bed at the first rain delay because I kind of felt and knew where this was going. And so I have not watched any of the game from the first time that it got delayed. So 17-0 at halftime. I did not see the second touchdown. I did not see the second field goal or any of that second half of play that mattered, basically. I did go through it play by play. just to get a feel for what those plays looked like, how many runs, how many passes, all this stuff. I don't think it's necessary that I saw that second half. I saw a lot in the first half that we're going to talk about here and dissect in a second. But obviously that was a crazy night. In my 66 games as a Hawkeye in the uniform, Kevin and Drake as well, there was not one game, I believe, that we had a delay for anything. In our 5 years, I don't think one single game was delayed. We played in conditions a few times, but never in an actual rain, like a real downfall, something that would affect the game. I can remember twice there was a windy day that spit just a little bit in Illinois our junior year. Drake and I just referenced that a couple podcasts back. I believe might have been the Patreon episode. That was a crappy day. We played at Minnesota. Many of you will remember, one of the worst scoreboard slackings that Iowa has taken in the last decade. Minnesota beat us 55-7 in Minneapolis in 2014. Would have been one of my first like six or seven starts as a Hawkeye, as a redshirt freshman. And it rained a little bit during pregame there and kind of was off and on sprinkling. But there was nothing that Kevin Drake and I experienced like the end of last week's game where that rain was coming down, and certainly nothing like last night where they had to delay a game for lightning on the, I was not at the game, obviously. It looked like it was raining pretty good there. People had rain ponchos on, similar to the Iowa State game from 2019, I believe, when game day was there. And it was the Keith Duncan game where he had four field goals. Probably one of the more impressive kicking outings of the last 20 years, under KF. I've never been in a rain delay. I don't know what that's like. I'm probably going to use that as a subject on Thursday's episode. The problem is you never know when you're going back out. You're always kind of on that 30-minute clock, and you're already on this extended, weird 3 to 4 hour schedule where it's tough to be up, right, for a football game and keep the adrenaline high and the energy high for 3 to 4 hours. It's really, really tough. The dump after a game, just a normal game, even a short game that might go somewhere around 3 hours, is crazy. The fatigue that hits you that night, even as a long snapper, where I didn't have to like get up to hit anybody or take on blocks every play or you know, exert my body. It was still crazy, the amount of adrenaline dump that would happen after a game. I can't imagine dealing with that in the middle of a game. It sounds horrible, to be honest. It puts the staff in a weird spot, the strength staff specifically, because they're in charge of keeping those guys loose, keeping those guys high energy, keeping them locked in. But at the same time, you can't just stay laser focused for 8 hours, right? They started that game at 6:30 and it finished at 1:30. So that's 7 hours, 7 hours. You can't even stay awake at work for 7 hours and you're sitting at a desk. So, you know, it'll be really interesting, one, to talk to some of these seniors after the year and get their perspective on what this night was like, because it's a very unique night. But yeah, no experience there that we can really speak from. And you're always just kind of on that 30-minute clock waiting for the lightning to just stop. And so that's weird. 1:30 a.m. How that affects today, Sunday, makes things probably a little bit different, but not too much in reality. You'd think like, oh, they'll probably push things back. They probably won't. Usually people, guys would come in around 11 a.m. So they still should have been able to get like close to an 8 hours rest. And it's probably, I'm not going to say business as usual, because that's what Spencer said in the in the interview last week, but it's business as usual as far as schedule goes. Let's talk about my initial thoughts on this game. Kind of weird, right? I am as offensively intelligent as most of you are. In fact, probably less than. I don't understand offensive schemes. I couldn't put up 11 guys on a whiteboard. And if you tell me, hey, run this play, I wouldn't even know what formation to put them in. I wouldn't know who's blocking who, which linemen are supposed to double to the second level. I don't know any of that, right? But I do know, as a fan, similar to most of you, when the plays look different than they have before. And in the first, from what I watched last night, in that first half plus the first 5 or so minutes of the second half, Iowa was clearly running a few different plays. And within some of the same plays that they've ran, they were looking to different players, specifically downfield. It seemed like somebody told Spencer, hey, you're not allowed to throw under 10 yards tonight. Now, he had a couple under 10 yards. There were, it wasn't that black and white. But can we count on the number of, can we count on our hands the number of times in the first two games that Spencer has sat back in the pocket and taken a shot downfield over 20 yards? Was it the one play versus South Dakota State to Arland on that third down from our own territory? Was that the only one? I'm sure there's a couple other ones. But he looked, it looked like he had a different, like he, it looked like he almost unlocked a new ability in a video game. Like, hey, you're now allowed to throw 20 to 40 yards instead of just under 20. It was weird. That's the only way I can describe it. It was really weird that he's now all of a sudden taking shots, some back to back. And in my assessment, and I think many on Twitter's as well, is his deep ball, and this is what we saw from that one pass highlight from the Manning camp, is his deep ball isn't bad. He throws an on-time, pretty catchable deep ball. And unfortunately, some of the problems that we were having last night, all, you know, and call them problems or just concerns, were, you know, in a 27-0 victory, they're going to take it, was that his receivers almost looked like they weren't ready for it. Too specifically, and I saw, you know, I saw in the play-by-play in the second half of stuff that I didn't catch, right, that we're taking a shot to somewhere in one of these drives, we're taking another shot to Nico for 45 yards. So it didn't stop. There were several incomplete passes. I can't wait to watch the second half back. I'll probably just watch the entire game back. But there were several incomplete passes from Spencer. The completion percentage, still not where we would like it to be. I think the floor for a college quarterback should be somewhere around that 60% range. Spencer for this game ended up 14 of 26. 14 of 26 comes out to about 53.8%, call it 54%. So you'd like to see a couple more of those probably completed, right? And who looked a lot better than he did versus South Dakota State, who looked a lot better than he did versus Iowa State. The offense in general, we'll get to the total yardage here in a second. But if Jack Johnson seemingly just runs to the ball instead of runs parallel with it and gets there and catches a long ball early in the first half, and Brody Brecht runs to the ball and turns the right way early enough, two beautifully thrown balls, Spencer's got another 60 or 70 passing yards, two extra completions, and the offense has, you know, the offense has another 70 yards. Another one to Nico in the end zone. That one might have been just slightly overthrown, but I still think that that's a catchable ball by Nico if he, in another scenario, like in an, you know, out of 10 times, I think Nico goes and catches that ball. Speaking of Nico, number 89, it appears to me, to Tyler Kluber, that Nico Reganey being in the game calms Spencer down a little bit. That's Spencer's guy. Only two receptions for 56 yards, probably should have had more, but for some reason, 89 being in the game and him being an option settles Spencer down and lets him see a little better. Now, receiving wise, we actually spread it around pretty decent. And this is something that we've had problems with in the past. Nico with two catches, Arlen with three, Gavin with three, Sam Laporta with two, Keegan Johnson, good to see him back out there as well. Didn't have a huge impact on the game. Looked like he was kind of on a pitch count. He had two. Caleb Johnson had one. Big day for him in the running game. And Brody Brecht had one for four. I should have had probably two more. A couple pass interferences as well that helped us out early on in the parts that I did watch. So, you know, there's probably a couple more receptions that get caught if it weren't for the defense illegally restricting us from those. But the passing game looked better. 175 yards passing. Let's talk about the offense here. 175 yards is about what we've had the first two games. I've got it up here. The NCAA.com hasn't updated these stats yet, but in those first two games, we've scored or we've managed 158 yards per game. 158 yards per game. Let me repeat that. I know you guys have heard it for the last 2 weeks, but that's bad. That's abysmal. And tonight, we were able to eclipse 158 yards in both the running and the passing game. That's movement. That's movement. It looks good to an Iowa fan. Let's not get carried away. 162 yards rushing. We talked about the receiving stats. 175 receiving. Most of that came from Gavin Williams, Arlen Bruce, and Nico. And I think that's big if we can get Gavin and Caleb to catch out of the backfield. That's similar to when a quarterback can pull it down. If you can get a back who's dangerous out of the backfield as a check down and can make something happen, that's better than throwing it away or taking a sack, right? We need that to happen. In the rushing game, our first 100-yard game, Caleb Johnson had a huge day, scored two touchdowns. Gavin Williams got most of the carries, 16 for 57, 3.6-yard average. That's better. That's better. We'll take that. Caleb Johnson, those seven carries for 103 yards, and I have not seen the second touchdown, which was a 50-yarder, 55-yarder. But the first one, yeah, 55-yard touchdown in the second half. The first touchdown was a great run by him. Couple play drive early in the game, right? And I know the start of this game looked like, oh my God, here we go again. Punt, six plays by Iowa, punt. Three plays by Nevada, punt. Five plays by Iowa, punt. Three plays by Nevada, punt. But then, two plays. Incomplete pass by Spencer to start a drive. We're at the Nevada 40. And I said to my wife, I said to her, we're getting the ball in the 40. We've got a couple drives under our belt here. People were settling into the first quarter. We are getting seven. I literally looked to her and said this. We're scoring on this play. She goes seven or three. I said, it's got to be seven. If it's not seven, we don't deserve to be a Division I football team. And within 10 seconds, Caleb Johnson chalks off this 40-yard run. And then I rolled it back. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Where does this come from? Right? Why all of a sudden can we crank off 40? And it turns out when your line moves people, when your offensive line on the movement of the ball fires off and displaces D linemen, it creates space for running backs. Caleb Johnson finds that space, and then he makes a great play in the secondary, kind of gets help between two defenders where they both crunch him at the same time. Momentum kind of keeps him up. He bounces off, makes a great run to the end zone. We're going to get you guys back to the show in just a second, but first we want to let you guys know about our title sponsor, DRF Sports. ia.drf.com. I'll say it again, ia.drf.com to sign up and start playing now and cashing in with DRF Sportsbook. They are Iowa's sportsbook. They are kind of like the walk-ons. They got that walk-on mentality. They're the little guy trying to make a name for themselves, and they're doing a hell of a job. We're helping each other grow each other's brands. They have some of the best sign-up bonuses bonuses, sign up promos, deposit matches, you know, first bet promotions in the game. You're going to get at least one of those when you sign up, and you can start cashing in right now. You can also go visit the official DRF Sportsbook in person at Lakeside Hotel and Casino in Osceola. During the season as well, be sure to listen to our Thursday episodes, the preview episodes, where we will feature our walk-ons times DRF collabs, where we choose a bet each week to boost the odds and see if we can't all make a little green. Shout out to DRF for being an incredible sponsor, incredible people, and helping us here at the walk-ons. It was but 2 years ago when the walk-ons were searching for somebody to handle their merchandise. We found a company, we did our first merch run, and it all went down the drain because we found somebody that wasn't like AdCraft, that didn't operate like they do at AdCraft Custom Apparel and Merchandise. And thank God we found the people at AdCraft, because ever since then, since we started working with this beautiful company from Clinton, everything we've done has been smooth, has been fast, has been quality, and they take care of a lot of headaches that the Washed Up Walk-Ons, our brand, would otherwise have to deal with, and we don't want to have to think about those things. Their customer service, their warehouse staff, their design team, the speed at which they get things done, their ability to handle sports teams and companies and brands like ours. They can do it all, and if you have custom merchandise and apparel needs, or you just have an idea for a t-shirt that might sell a little bit, hit up AdCraft, adcraftwebstores.com. I promise, the walk-on promise, that you are going to be satisfied with what they can do for you. AdCraft, custom apparel and merchandise. A lot of promise from Caleb Johnson as a young back. Strong, good balance, good speed, seems to have decent eyes. No LaShawn Williams tonight, so it's good that him and Gavin were able to go. And so I'm thinking, okay, here we go, right? Everyone's, you know, Hawkeye Nation's like, oh, maybe this is different. I don't want everyone to get sucked into that, because what I do want you to remember, and I do want you to think about, and I'm not here to feed the negative, right? But the big question here is, okay, has Iowa figured something out, or was this just Nevada's really bad? I tend to lean towards Nevada's just really bad. Two things. And I understand that, you know, we go into half 17 up, right? If we just double that half in a normal game where you don't have a lightning delay and guys don't get tight, who knows how much they actually score in the second half. It was great for the under. We'll go over the awards winners at the end of this episode. But both Kevin and I hit on our bets in this game. 17 points. They end with 27 against a defense that is 105th in the country, or 95th, one of the two. It's not very good. This team was giving up over 400 yards a game. We only got 337. So they held us to below their average. A good day for them defensively of the 3 or 4 games they've played. 337 yards. Wow, that seems like a lot as an Iowa fan, right? Well, just to put that in context, if that was our average for the first 3 games, not just what we did yesterday to add to our average, which was already all-time low, but if that was our average for the first 3 games, 337 yards of offense, we would still not crack the top 100 offensively. That doesn't give me a lot of hope. We're playing a bottom 25% defense. We go for 337 yards, which would leave us tied with UConn at 104th in the country for an offensive production average, yards-wise. If we had scored or gained that many in the first 2 games, I did the math. It brought our average up to about 217, not 337. Now our average is at 217, which, yes, depending on what Colorado State, New Mexico State, and Boston College did yesterday, is still going to be good for last in the country. We're still going to be last, and we're going to be last by about 20 yards. So we've got a lot of work to do, as we still are technically the worst offense in the country. Now, the scoring helped. The scoring helped, and the defense did their thing. Our defense is going to continue to climb from sixth up to fifth or fourth in that top five range of scoring defense. Nevada gained just 151 yards of offense yesterday, 69 rushing yards, and 82 through the air. Their quarterback was 14 of 28 through the one pick to Cooper DeJean. How about Cooper, by the way? God, that kid's going to be fun to watch for the next 2 years after this, two or three. So we're taking shots, right? It's great to see Nico and Keegan back in the game, right? The offensive line, arguably in the time that I watched, right, the first half, they played better. Our receivers are getting a little bit more separation. Our running game seems to be picking up a little bit. The comfortability seems to be settling in. But is this a step forward? And by all means, we had to go out and play who was on the schedule, right? Nevada was scheduled. This is who we had. There's nothing we can do about playing a shitty opponent. So no matter what, this is a step forward. If anything, just for the confidence to see long passes go through the air and be completed, to see Caleb Johnson run for 40 yards on a play that matters, right? Another great day for our defense where they didn't have to work too hard. Although Nevada had several plays and a couple drives where I don't know if we were playing up to our standard. I saw they missed a field goal attempt, so the shutout was partially their fault too. Is all of this, you know, how much better did we get? And this is the question that's going to be asked all week. How much better did we get on our side of the football versus how much of this production, which isn't crazy good, 337 yards of offense, Spencer 14 of 26. How much of that very average performance was just because of the opponent we played? I mean, guys, Nevada was bad. Nevada's got to feel like shit today. One, because they were in a 7-hour football game. But two, because to the worst offense in the country, they just gave up 27 points and over 300 yards of offense. They're bad. They're really bad. I might be able to go play for them still today and find a spot on that defense. I watched one of their special teams. And in fact, let's talk about the Torrey Taylor count the kicks special teams play of the game, brought to you by myself and the one and only me, Tyler Kluver, because I get to decide this. The count the kicks play of the game. First week it was the long snapper. Probably should have been Torrey, but I made it the long snapper because home cooking. Last week it was obviously Van Ness with two punt blocks. This week, Drew Stevens. Not to be punny or anything, but he found his footing, right? Two field goals, one from 33, one from 43. 38-yard average. Nothing special, but hey, it was a wet night. Looks like they're going with him over Blom in his first outing as the guy. He makes it work, 2 for 2. Also doing the kickoffs, 3 for 3 on PATs. That's the performance you want from your kicker. And good to see a young guy go out there and do that. Now, also on special teams, it was nice to see Arland have a little bit of success in the return game. Part of that was, and here's where I'm going with this, from the Nevada is bad angle. I've never seen so many guys on a punt team, and I watched a lot of punt film. It's the only film I watched in college. I've never seen so many guys out of their lane on a punt coverage team. And what this says to me is that this team is bad. It was just one more data point that was blatantly obvious to a guy who knows what to look for, that this team doesn't know what they're doing. And I've got two examples of that. One, on I believe it was Arland's longest punt return. Let me see if I can find it. That doesn't give me that on the play-by-play. It was It was, I believe it was his longest punt return. The gunner from the left side, who is supposed to kind of close the gap gradually all the way to the impact point with the other gunner, right? Ideally, they would end up funneling down to the returner. He crossed all the way across the field, and he got blocked that way a little bit. But he ended up on the entirely opposite side of the field, which is why Arland had that space to our sideline to run up 20 or 30 yards and have such a great return, because the gunner just left it. He left that side of the field wide open. You're never supposed to do that. Horrible. Horrible. Similarly, on Arland's touchdown catch, which was a slight overthrow by Spencer, he got a little excited because Arland was wide open. Great catch by Arland in the end zone. That corner against a good team picks up Arland coming across the formation in that motion and probably picks him up, and Arland's probably covered, right? Maybe he's not. Maybe, and this is part of what I think needs to happen more, and it was exciting to watch last night, is Spencer needs to take shots when we have guys that aren't wide open. That's, you know, we've got to, the receivers are there, they're on scholarship to make plays, right? So we can't just get into the habit of throwing balls to guys who are just blatantly wide open. If they're covered, let them make a play. Trust that they're going to go up and get the ball, or at least fight it off and make sure the defender doesn't intercept it. But let's give our guys a chance, right? But Arland was wide open in the end zone. And I don't know if we're playing Iowa State or if we're even playing South Dakota State that he's that wide open. And if he's not, does Spencer throw that ball? I don't know. And this is how each and every single dissection of this game is going to come to a head over the next week, is every conversation is going to be, well, this looked better, but was it because Nevada was so bad? That is my assessment of what went down last night. Now, nonetheless, again, they were on the schedule. Iowa had to do, you know, had to play who was coming to Kinnick. 27-0. That's a good win. Again, I think if you ask most people, this is a game where Iowa should have scored more than 27 points. And I get it. It's weird. They had to sit in the locker room. Let's give them another touchdown. You know, let's give them another touchdown. Call it 34-0 because of the rain delay and the weather. But they probably should have scored more than 34. There's a lot of drives. If you go to this ESPN, I've got it pulled up right here, this play-by-play. It's got drive-by-drive. I mean, we still punted seven times. That's not great. That's probably above average. Now, granted, for this offense, Torrey's had like 10 and 8 or something punts. But seven punts against this team, that's not good. There was still plenty of the old and the what we've seen these first two games where the offensive line gets blown up and it's a one-yard gain or a one-yard loss. There's still predictable plays where they're stacking the box and we just run right into it. There's a lot of stuff going on that still might be questionable against this Nevada team. But it's good to see the deep balls. It's good to see Spencer throw pretty accurately on those deep balls. And if we can get our receivers to turn their head, turn the right way, fall in line and in step with the pass, I think we've got something going there. But even then, that goes back to Brian Ferentz calling the plays. Are we just calling these plays because Nevada's so bad? It's good to at least get them on film. Now people got to prepare for them. But when Michigan comes to town, are we going to have the nuts to step up and call that play and throw that ball to Nico or to Brody or to Keegan? We're going to have to. And they're not Nevada. In fact, if we go to the stats, Michigan currently sits 17th in the country in total offense and 13th in the country in total defense. That's a top 20 team in both categories. How do our receivers look against them? How does Spencer feel and play against them? How does Brian call a game against them? Does it look the same as Nevada? Because if it does, then I have a little hope. Because I'm one who believes that our scholarship guys, even though it's going to be much more equal talent or Michigan guys will be better, I'm one who believes that we can, that that's the only way we win those games, is you have to take shots and let your players make plays. Because we're not going to beat Michigan running the zone into an eight-man box stacked double blitzes and getting 2 yards per play and going 10 of 24. It's just not going to happen. The offensive line looked better. I think Jennings Dunker is definitely a guy that has to be in there. I was not able to see a lot. I didn't notice this, but I saw John Miller tweet about it, that Ellsbury was finally back in. I know he's been hurt. He was mentioned by Coach Ferentz as one of those guys who, unfortunately, in those first 2 weeks, somehow injury-related, took a step back from where he was in camp. And John said that they're better with him, and I trust John. John said that they're better. The Iowa offensive line is better when Ellsbury's in. So I think Logan Jones is your center. I think Ellsbury's a guard. I think Jennings Dunker is a guard. And then I think it's Richmond and Plum on the outside. I think those are your five. In my assessment through three games, those are your five offensive linemen. And I feel, and maybe Connor Colby, I forgot about him. Maybe Connor Colby is the right tackle, or he's mixed in there somewhere. But I think those are your top six. And to be honest, they've still got a lot of work to do. The offensive line looked like they, in the Iowa State game, it looked like they figured out the snap and the cadence, and they were going a little quicker, and they were more in sync. It looked like they took a step back in this game again. Again, it looked like the line was firing off at different times. There was a delay. It's weird. I was expecting a false start call multiple times. It didn't come. And I don't know what that is. It's just a slow exchange from Spencer and Logan. I'm not sure. But there's still issues there. Speaking of total defense, and I know everyone's been playing teams that they don't play in the conference yet, but as I look at this, knowing that we go to Rutgers next week, Rutgers is ninth in the country in total defense. So we see a completely different outfit next week. And I know Rutgers probably hasn't played anybody yet. We'll get into that on Thursday. But it just it caught my eye that Rutgers currently threw two games. And let's see, I think they actually struggled yesterday. The West, I mean, we're going to talk about the West. Purdue's game against Syracuse. Some crazy stuff happening. So Rutgers beat Boston College 22-21. Then they beat Wagner 66-7. And then yesterday they beat Temple 16-14. So another day where I'm going to try and see if I can't find how many yards they gave up, but they are through 3 weeks, they are a team who is a top 10 or top 15 defense as far as yards allowed in the country. So maybe, and are they actually that good? Is Rutgers going to finish top 15 in the country in total defense? No, they're not. But this is a good game to start Big Ten play. It's going to be a real test. And it's our first road game of the year, which provides a whole new set of challenges. So I'm left in a, you know, I'm going to sign off here because the 40 minutes of listening to me talk about this stuff is enough. But am I wrong or am I right on par? Is everybody else sitting here with me going, okay, it looked better. It was more exciting. But how much of that was because Nevada couldn't beat the top 20 FCS teams? Maybe even more. Incarnate Ward, who's an FCS team, put up like 60 on them. Again, we only put up 27. The whole question was, somebody posed this on Twitter, and I'll leave with this. The whole question was, what would the Iowa offense have to do to this Nevada team to make you feel any better about actually making significant progress? And I saw things like, I don't think... It was my opinion that there was basically nothing they could do unless they scored 80 points. There was nothing they could do to make me feel a whole lot better. I saw a lot of numbers thrown out there around that 35-42 range of 5 or 6 touchdowns. We didn't get there. Blame it on the rain delay or what, but we didn't get there. So I'm not there's still a lot of questions to be answered. I think the one that was best answered and the one that maybe was most important, because you can work with it moving forward, is that having Keegan and Nico back in the game does make a difference. And I'll give kudos to Coach Ferentz on that one. He's been saying that, like, hey, you can't evaluate Spencer because we don't have all our guys in there. That's probably true. It seems to be true. He seems to be better and more comfortable and a little bit more calculated in there with Nico and Keegan. But is that enough? Is that enough? That's going to be the question. Rutgers next week. And as always, I appreciate you guys listening, tuning in to me at, you know, record this at 7:30 in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. There's going to be a live show on Tuesday afternoon, call-in show around 4 p.m. Join if you can on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. Or it's just the Washed Up Walk-Ons channel on all three of those. For the Patreon members, patreon.com/washedupwalkons, there will be an extra episode where we talk about Drake winning his jiu-jitsu tournament and choking somebody out over the weekend. We'll also post the link to the video. It was streamed live. It was kind of like a legit event that Drake went and won. He's a psychopath. Kevin will be back on Wednesday night to help me record the preview. And who knows, maybe Drake pops in to talk about a little 27-point performance. I doubt it. So we'll be back on Thursday with the preview episode of Rutgers. Until then, a win's a win.